This is the current federal tax developments for the week of December the 21st, 2020. Current federal tax developments are brought to you by Kaplan Financial Education and by your state society of CPAs. I'm Ed Zollers, and we're going to be talking this week about some of the developments that are a little bit different. In fact, I'm going to do something very different this week. What we're going to be looking at this week is not an actual development at the moment, but rather a proposed development. And this is probably because we don't have a lot of huge things happening this week. And to the extent we need to, I'll try to cover that next week. But what we do have right now are some things going on that are going through Congress. Congress is looking at passing a COVID-19 relief package as I talk. Right now, this is Saturday in the afternoon. Where they're sitting right now is apparently they are now fighting over the Federal Reserve. So we'll see how things go and if we actually get a deal or not. And it is important to understand that what we're talking about this week is a proposed bill. So make sure you don't go off and believe all of this has happened, because as it stands right now, big disclaimer, none of this has happened. And it's very likely if it does happen, it will still be very different from what we have now. But there are some things we do know. There is a proposed COVID-19 relief bill. It was put together by a group that calls themselves the Problem Solvers, which is an even number of Democratic and Republican members of Congress who came together with the $900 billion proposal that appears to have become the basis for what may be the most promising option we've had so far for another COVID relief bill to pass the Congress that could get past both houses. A few things that this thing would do: it would reopen and revise the PPP loan program. So we'd see the regular old, what we've always known as loan. There are some changes there. We'll discuss that. It would also start up a second draw program that is a need-based program. By that I mean you have to show that you have a drop in revenue. So it's not just anybody who's a small business who says, hey, I think I need this, can go get one. It will be a program only for those that had already taken and spent their funds from the first loan and now are looking to get a second bit of relief because they have had that 30% drop in a quarter for 20 versus 19. We'll discuss that here. We did get the fix in, and we'll talk about that for the tax deduction issue for items that are paid with PPP funds, which of course is something I think a lot of us were interested in seeing happening. We got a simplified forgiveness application as well. So that's going to make it easier. We'll talk about that. We actually got two of them. So we'll talk about our simplified applications, how they work, and what we're going to be doing with regard to that. So let's go ahead and let's take a look at our program. Now, again, as I said, big warning. You know, this is a new this is basically a proposal only. It is very, 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 very likely to change if it's enacted. In fact, we already know that there is at least one judge. Just before I started this, I saw a tweet that Senator Rubio had noted that there were some discussions about which not-for-profit should be allowed to get the loans. And his statement was that that's going to be resolved by leadership and negotiations. So we know at the very least part of the discussion we're going to tell you about who qualifies is really up in the air, because apparently there's some dispute. Didn't give us the nature of what they're fighting over on that, but that there is some dispute about who would qualify. So let's talk about some of these rules. First thing is, let's go talk about the modifications to the original PPP loan program. And what they would propose to do, there are a couple things. First thing is kind of interesting on the side. You may remember we kept referencing seasonal employers all through the PPP loan program, but we never got a definition of what a seasonal employer is. Well, they're actually going to put a definition in the bill this time, and you'll see it'll be somebody who either doesn't operate for 7 months during the calendar year or had gross receipts during the preceding calendar year for any 6 months that were not more than one-third of gross receipts for the other 6 months. And that apparently will be our definition of seasonal. Now, interestingly enough, it kind of appears like it's retroactive. So, you know, it may be if you tried to use one of the seasonal options and you can't meet those tests, not totally sure if you're going to have a problem. They also are going to add in this one, and this is part of what they may be fighting over right now, certain 501c6 organizations would qualify. Now, there are restrictions on who can. Essentially, it can't be a professional sports league. It can't be an organization for the promoting or participating in a political campaign or other activity primarily. Those are the issues, and there are issues, restrictions on lobbying activity. Cannot have more than 150 employees. And basically, that's the background. There is a special odd carve-out that can get certain, shall we say, destination marketing organizations can qualify. That's a little bit weird under this, so we've got that here. The other thing we got here is we do have a few more eligible expenses. And what we're going to do now is we're going to add to the list. Now, what are those expenses? There will be, and these are non-payroll. There will be one change to payroll costs, and then the proposal is a number of changes for additional non-payroll costs. Okay, the non-payroll costs would include covered operation expenditures, and that's defined as a payment for any business software or cloud computing service that facilitates business operations, product or service delivery, the processing, payment, or tracking of payroll expenses, human resources, sales and billing functions, or accounting or tracking of supplies, inventory, records, and expenses. So expenses related to those would come into the category. Property damage costs would be costs related to property damage and vandalism or looting due to published disturbances that occurred during 2020 that was not covered by insurance or other compensation. Next category, number three, be a covered supplier cost. That's defined as an expenditure made by an entity to a supplier of goods pursuant to a contract, order, or purchase order in effect before the date of disbursement of the money for the loan, for the supply of goods that are essential to the operation of the entity at the time in which the expenditure is made. And finally, a rather broad category called covered worker protection expenditures. And this talks about an operating or capital expenditure is required to facilitate the adaptation of the business activities of an entity to comply with requirements established or guidance issued by Departments of Health and Human Services, the Centers for Disease Control, or OSHA, during the period beginning on March 1st of 2020 and ending on the date the national emergency basically terminates. And there is a nice list of things that would qualify under that category. And for instance, they said that would include things like the purchase, maintenance, or renovations of assets that create or expand a drive-through window facility, an indoor-outdoor combined air or air pressure ventilation or filtration system, a physical barrier such as a sneeze guard, indoor-outdoor combined commercial property, an on-site or off-site health screening capability, or other assets related to compliance with the requirements or guidance as determined by the administrator of SBA in consultation with Health and Human Services and the Secretary of Labor. It also has a list of various specific personal protective equipment, including N95 filtering respirators, surgical masks would be in there, night nitrile gloves, and level 3 and 4 surgical gowns, particulate filtering face piece respirators, how's that for a nice term, and other PPE. However, this will not include any residential real property or intangible property, cannot qualify for this issue. Now, these do not have retroactive effect. They only apply for loans for forgiveness that's granted after the date of enactment of ECRA. So if you do have somebody that's currently having issues meeting their total cost requirements and they've spent on things like that, you might consider, you know, kind of biding your time and waiting to make the application, presuming that once we get this done, you know, if this passes, they'd be able to include those costs, because it does not appear, if you've been turned down already because you didn't have enough costs, that you're gonna be able to go back and add these in. Don't ask, I'm not sure why, but apparently you won't. Group insurance payments are the one thing, or I should say, it's called group insurance payments are added to the benefits category. For payroll costs, and that's a minor change they made, but it is there. One of the changes you probably will be happy about is that we did get a deduction for expenses that are paid with a PPP loan. So remember, we had the IRS told us in Notice 2020-32 that, sorry guys, you cannot claim a deduction for any expenses related to PPP loans. We had then the IRS saying, oh, by the way, if you expect to get reimbursed, that's also going to blow it, even if you haven't yet been reimbursed. And the interesting part was the chair of Senate Finance Committee this week released a note on his website that called it poppycock, is what I think was the term. In any event, it does look like they are going to try to attack that now. If we get the bill, it seems they're going to highly get the deduction. So you might want to keep your eyes open on that. That's a real messy, complicating factor, though, because obviously this affects your year-end tax planning for December year-ends. And Congress is moving rather oddly and slowly in walking this one through. And there's at least some risk that they actually end up pushing this all the way into the last week of the year, in which case then we're going to have a bit of a problem. So I think you need to keep your eye on this and keep watching it. But it definitely is going to be one of those things to just be aware of as we keep going. Now, we also had, they cleaned up the definition for selection of covered period for forgiveness. And basically what they're going to do now is, instead of having that weird 8-week rule, if you were a, it was an 8-week rule, if you got your loan before June 6th, but you could elect to go 24 weeks. If you got your loan after June 6th, you had to go 24 weeks. Well, and then the SBA said, but you could cut off early. So they're now going to put this into the law and just simplify it. Your covered period begins on the date you receive your loan proceeds, and it ends on a date selected by the borrower that falls between 8 weeks after the day you got the funds. So you have to stretch out. So bottom line, they're saying now, you have to stretch out at least 8 weeks. So we have to be here for at least 8 weeks or it doesn't count. But you can go ahead then anytime between 8 and 24 weeks, that will become your covered period. So it essentially codifies what the SBA had been allowing us to do anyway. So I guess that's good news in that we're going to get this. We now will have a covered period that makes a little more sense. You know, at least it'll be with the actual law. But yeah, it's one of those things that they fixed here right at the end. So we're going to now have that straightened out. So that's more of a technical correction to pick up, but it is something there. They also made some technical changes. Because we're now moving into the safe harbor cutoff date, should be September 30 of 2021. If you're looking at the screen right now, you're watching the video, you'll see it says 20. Shouldn't say 20, it should say 21. This will include changes to the safe harbors number 1 and 2. You know, essentially, remember with safe harbor number 1, if you couldn't get back to your level of activities from February 15th until the end of your covered period or December 31st. This will now push it up to September 30, 2021. Why they're pushing it that far is because, you know, we're going to be extending the program into next year, so we don't cut off the end of 20 any longer. Just like for a while, we cut off the end of June, and then we decided we didn't do that because we extended the PPP loan program. We're going to extend it again, so essentially we're getting to that time period to go there. And also, I think the feeling is, and why September 30 is being chosen, is because now that we do have, you know, vaccines rolling out, admittedly not huge numbers yet, but because the vaccines are available, my guess is, the theory of Congress is, well, by the end of next September, we really will be, we assume, through this, assuming, you know, the vaccines work and we keep moving forward. And the idea being, therefore, by then, that'll really be a time to get out. So, for instance, on the safe harbor number 2, where you're trying to restore your level of employment or your wages to what they were at the beginning, you know, to what they were back in February or in the first quarter of 2020, this is going to be a simpler method to do that, because the theory is by next September, we should be in a position where businesses are kind of back to a more normal set of operations. So it should probably be something that will work for us. Let's say, hopefully, it'll work for us in this scenario. Okay, now, the next thing gets a little more involved, and this is, we are going, you've been hearing about this for a long time, the simplified application for forgiveness. And, you know, we remember there was supposed to be a kind of quasi-automatic forgiveness for loans up to $150,000 that was being requested. And we have these other things. We know we are supposed to be looking at every loan that's over $2 million. So what Congress has decided to do, at least at this point, it appears would go with this, is there are going to be two simplified applications. And the first one seems to be super simple. The law simply says that anybody who had a loan of $150,000 or less will simply submit a one-page application to the SBA that will tell them, I qualify for full forgiveness. Now, it is interesting that it appears your only option is to say, I qualify for full forgiveness, or you have to go back and fill in a longer form, because there does not appear any way to say, I qualify for partial forgiveness. But, you know, I don't know if that's the theory. They're just thinking everybody there is going to qualify for full forgiveness, especially when we now allow them to go the full 24 weeks, which may very well be right. But in any event, we're going to have that application form. So that's application form number one. Application form number two is a little more interesting. This one hadn't really been discussed much before. And that would be a relatively simplified form for those who have loans over $150,000 but less than $2 million. Okay. Now, what they're going to say with that, you will not be required to submit documentation verifying the number of full-time equivalent employees on payroll and pay dates. And that also included all those payroll tax filings, right, to the IRS, the states, etc. None of that goes in, nor do you send in documentation of your non-payroll expenses, right? Nor do you make a certification that all of this is true or correct, which is an odd one to leave out, but I guess we're certifying because it's not there, we're going to be there. Now, you are going to be required to retain all employment records relevant to the application for the four-year period following submission application, and all other documentation for 3 years. And, you know, and you may go ahead and submit a form related to demographics. But the interesting aside there is, remember, the statute of limitations on this thing generally is 6 years. But this loan document says if you have this special application on less than $2 million, it's only going to be a three-year period or 4 years. So that appears to be shortening up for practical purposes the statute of limitation unless they're charging you with fraud. And actually, there is a limited amount of things they can do in terms of going after somebody with a loan below 150. That provision is at best confusing the way it's written, but it does appear that essentially they can go after you for fraud, they can go after you for spending money on the wrong, on things that weren't allowed to be spent on, but it does not appear that they really can go after you for not actually having, let's say, spent 60% of the amount on payroll costs, because it's just weird how it's written. I think the practical side of it is that they really are just going to give automatic forgiveness at 150, unless you've gone out there and, you know, took your $150,000 and bought yourself, you know, you decide how much car can I buy for 150 for personal use only. You know, if that was your decision, then yeah, you may be hung by this due to fraud. But otherwise, it seems like they're going to be very open on the 150s. And again, for the larger loans, well, even up to $2 million. Now, the $2 million, we're not changing. So keep in mind that those people are probably still going to have the same problems they've had before, things they might have to come up with, things they might have to do. But we are getting these lower loans supposedly taken care of here. So if your client's getting ready to apply, you might tell them if we could wait a week and maybe pick this up after the holidays, it may be much simpler than if we pick it up before the holidays. Now, one thing they are changing is the maximum loans are going to go to $2 million going forward. And this will have an impact on a couple of things, including the reopening of the program. They're not going to go back and say, you know, in prior years, right? So they're not going to go back and say that for loans taken out last year, if you got more than $2 million, you got to give it back. But they are going to keep us at $2 million. And the impact will be, as we're going to discuss, there's going to be a couple of options to reopen the PPP loan program. When we go back to reopen it, you're not going to be able to push your borrowings on the original loan program over $2 million, even though you might have, let's say, borrowed, you know, you qualified to borrow $8 million, you only borrowed $5 million. You'll find that there will be an option here to go back and borrow the rest that you left on the table. Does not appear that's going to work for you, though, if the amount, if you already got a loan over $2 million, it's you've already taken your now revised max if this goes through. Now, they also come back and, as I say, they reopen the PPP loan program. Okay, so the loan program will be reopened, the standard Paycheck Protection Program loan. Now, this is not the second draw program. This is the original program, meaning that we'll talk about the second draw program where you have to show a need for the loan. But this is just a standard program. They would go back to old PPP loans. Again, our max will be $2 million instead of $10 million, but otherwise we're back to the old program. So if, let's say, your client qualified for a PPP loan but didn't take one out, apparently they could go back now and take the loan out. Now, this time they'll be a little more aware of the fact that if they go back and take it, their name will probably be published. And there's actually websites now devoted to telling you everything you want to know about how much money, you know, somebody got in PPP loan proceeds. So if you need to understand that, you can check out your clients and find out for sure what they did. You know, you can check out your neighboring businesses also as well. So everything can be checked out now on that to see what you got. There is also, though, issues. You know, previously, right, the loan program said you could only have one draw. So if you took money out, let's say, and for instance, let's talk about what went on quite a bit back in May, where when the whole mess started with Ruth Chris and Potbelly sandwiches and with Shake Shack, and the SBA started all the saber rattling about, well, you really had to need the loan or we're coming after you. And the, you know, chair of the Senate committee who wrote this said, yep, we're coming after you. You're going to come testify in front of our committee if you didn't need the loan. Well, that scared a lot of businesses, including some very small ones, into paying everything back. Well, apparently now we're going to give these people a second chance, because the problem was, if you got a PPP loan, and then when they came back and said, oh, sorry, guys, you know, when they said, look, we're coming after you guys, you didn't certify correctly, and your small business panicked at that point, paid the loan back. Well, when the SBA came back later and said, well, we're just going to say if you're less than $2 million, you obviously were certified in good faith about the uncertainty. And it's like, well, you should have told us that first. Now, apparently, those could go back and get it because you two special cases. If the regulations have been changed by the SBA, so, you know, when the bank interpreted the rules when you applied for the loan, and we got a lot of this misinterpretation in the early days and where they wouldn't give you a loan based on certain things. This happened a lot with self-employed. We later found out that you should have gotten that loan at a higher amount, but the loan you got was this lower one. You already had your draw, so tough luck. Now they're going to go back and say explicitly, if later regulations clarify that you qualified for a larger loan than it appeared you did or that your lender thought you did at that time, you should qualify to go back in and get it. Or you also can do it just to simplify so to decide if they really decided right or not. You also can go back and get extra if you essentially didn't take out the maximum amount the first time. So essentially, if you already got the max PPP loan, you can't go back. If you didn't get the max loan, or you simply didn't apply for the loan, right, or you paid it back without forgiveness, then you can go back and, you know, draw whatever is left of $2 million. Obviously, if you never got the loan, then you could draw up to your maximum borrowing amount or the $2 million if that's less. If you did get the loan, then we got to go back and take whatever loan you got. If you got the loan and got forgiveness, we have to take whatever loan you got and then, you know, get rid of that differential and let you borrow the rest. So that'll be interesting to look at here because we've reopened. So as I said, we go back. If we just didn't apply for it, we can get the loan, or we can do it because for some reason we didn't borrow as much out as we probably should have in the program. Okay, now let's go to the new category. We have this new program called PPP Second Draw Loans. Okay, now these are loans that are a need-based loan program. By that I mean you have to demonstrate actual harm to the business, at least through a decline in revenue. So we're going to have this. It's not going to be one of those things, because there was a lot of criticism of the PPP loan program that, you know, companies that actually were doing well or doing very well, you know, still were able to borrow against it. And even though they may have, and when the SBA came out and said, if you're below $2 million, we're just going to say, yeah, you needed it. Well, you know, it was looked at by some as free money. So they're going to say, well, we're going to open up a second run, but we're not going to let people get in there who don't appear to need it. We now have evidence of who's really been impacted and seen an impact and who hasn't. So if your business has not seen an impact, you've actually seen your revenues increase over what they were previously, which there definitely are some businesses that have. You're not going to qualify for this, nor are you going to qualify if you've had just a modest decrease in revenue. So what's going to happen right now is it's going to be required, in order to do this, that you show you have at least a 30% decline, comparing at least one quarter from 2020 to 2019 equivalent quarter. Now, there are some special rules. If you were only in business part of the year, you know, you can't go back, you don't go back compared to the part you weren't in business in. If you weren't in business at all, there's a special rule that's going to compare you to the first quarter of 2020. You had to be in business on February 15th anyway, so you'd have to show a 30% decline from that. That could get tough because, again, if you miss nearly half the first quarter, you may still be doing much worse, let's say on a weekly basis, than you were in the first quarter, but you're not doing bad enough to be 30% below that only half quarter that you had there. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. But that'll be your 30% decline. Obviously, you know, it's one of those issues. They did make it a lot clearer how to do the max loan amounts. The new PPP2 loan will still be 2.5 months of average salaries. Generally, for a business that was in business all of last year, you know, and was in business all of last year's non-seasonal, it'll be 2.5 months of either. In this case, it's kind of weird because what we get is we have a choice now this time, unlike what we had before. So what they're going to offer you now is your amount for the maximum loan will be 2.5 months of the calendar year 2019, so what you would have used for your regular PPP, or the year before the date on which the loan is made. Now, my guess is, assuming you've been impacted by COVID, there's a good chance that you have fewer employees because, again, you only got 2.5 months worth of money in the PPP loan program. So I'm going to bet that 2019 for most businesses is going to look better than the year before they got their second draw, if they're a second draw company that's had a 30% decline in a previous quarter. But if it does turn out the prior year is better, you can use the year prior to when you're applying for the loan. That's going to be a little more fun too, because you have to document that, which means you have a moving target. So it's going to be a little more interesting to get that done. The loan forgiveness process, they tell us for the most part, it's going to be very, very similar to what we had in the PPP loan program. Oh, I should say, we also have definitions, you know, seasonal employers, new entities, that how they will compute their 2.5 months. And so that's also been clarified easier there. If you have a business with more than one location, they are going to cap the loans for all locations at $2 million, but the 300 employee limit, because that's also part of this deal. You only get this loan if you have less than 300 employees. So if you have between 300, let's say 301 to 500 employees, which you could still get a PPP loan, That's not going to work for this now for the second draw. The second draw will not work. It's going to be smaller, right? So you can't go up between 301 to 500. You got to be at less than 300 employees. And that's also because there were complaints that, you know, companies that had better connections to banks and had more revenue tended to get their loans a lot quicker. By the way, there are a whole series of rules here to try to limit how the money goes and to keep it going to smaller businesses. And so to make it more difficult if you're on the larger end of this scale to get your loans. So that's kind of intentional, right? That we're going to be doing it. Now, you cannot use your funds for lobbying. That's also key here. They've decided apparently that was apparently a concern somewhere in all of this, that people are out there doing their lobbying, all of those things. Now, when we talk about forgiveness, the 60% rule stays in place. So yes, you still have to have your payroll costs have to be 60%. But the interesting part this time was they actually wrote the law now the way the SBA has the form. So it actually says the amount of covered loan used for payroll costs during the covered period divided by 0.6 is going to be the cap on your forgiveness. So they actually went back and now they've written the law to follow form. That's, like I said, in a couple of occasions, they have literally obviously gone back and written the law to codify what the SBA was already doing. So that's kind of interesting. It's like, you know, the form driving the law instead of the law driving the form. So unique, but we got it. Now, some final issues we've got here. We talked about reopening the program. Loans are going to be available until March 31st of this year. So March 31st is when we're going to go ahead and end this program. So in theory, it would open up just before the end of 2020 or just into 21. My guess is, I think if they passed it today, which they're not going to, it's going to take at least a couple of days due to some of the things they have to do in the House and Senate before they can vote on something to get this passed. So my guess is we will be lucky. You know, it might be passed before Christmas. If it is, that'll be barely there. The odds of the SBA being ready to take applications for the reopened loans, especially for the PPP2 loan, which are I'm calling the second draw PPP2 loans, right? Those are the special second category. My guess is that's going to take some more writing, and there are some rules that they're supposed to have 7 days to get out certain rules. Well, if you take a look at that and you take a look at where we are in the year, the odds are we're going to be doing these draws in January. So we're going to have about 3 months on the program. It would take us through March. You draw against if you think you need it. That would, in theory, give you 8 weeks to pay. And, you know, Congress is hoping that by then, you know, we will be far enough along on the vaccination program, far enough along on everything else, that the economy will no longer need this type of support. That's at least the gamble. One other nice thing that got put in here, and it's just kind of a little one-liner section, but they did repeal the part of the old law that said EIDL advances reduced your PPP loan forgiveness. So we're going to go back, and that's not going to be a negative for us. Now, if your clients already had their PPP loan forgiveness reduced by their, you know, EID grant, it's actually EIDL advance, that's effectively a grant. I would suppose that the SBA will now come back and pay off their PPP loan. And if they've actually made payments against the loan, they may actually get some money back. They already started paying on it. Now, the big thing to remember today, okay, we've discussed all of this. Please, please, please remember, it is not law yet. We seriously expect there will be major, major changes in at least some of these provisions before we get to law. As I said, we've already been told you this, and Rubio has already said that there's apparently some fight over which not-for-profits can qualify to receive these loans. And that means, I don't know if they want it expanded or they want it contracted, he didn't say. But obviously you need to keep an eye on this very carefully. However, it does suggest some things here until we get certainty that at least if you're discussing with your client for year-end planning, like deductibility of those expenses paid with the loan, or we're talking about that EIDL advance being taxable income, or I should say also, they also have provision in here that those payments, where the SBA made payments on your SBA 7A loan for principal and interest, that also now clearly in here is not taxable, and no reduction of an expense or any reduction of basis for that amounts that the SBA paid off on your loan. So, you know, we're going to get that one also free. Now, that gives you some planning, and your clients that are having issues or may want to go back under the loan program, you know, you kind of need to get up to speed on that, because again, this is going to be coming and we'll see how it goes. My guess is they will pass something if they're going to. This week would be the most likely, but it is possible, and it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility, that they could pass something and do it very, very close to the end of the year. I think if they actually stretch, they would have all the way until January 3rd to do it, because this Congress would continue to exist until the new Congress is seated. The new Congress will be seated on January 4th, because remember, the 1st is a holiday. The 2nd falls on Saturday. The 3rd falls on Sunday. So the 4th is the day the new Congress would be seated. So if we get to the new Congress, that'd start this all over again. And then the complication there would be that then you've only got 20 days until you change presidents. And since the president is involved with this whole, you know, discussion about what he will sign, if you have a change in presidents coming in day 20, it could get really interesting in trying to get something through. And so then more likely they would wait and get something that the incoming president will sign and run it through him. Obviously, I'm sure at that point the Democrats in the House and Senate would believe that they got a better negotiating position now, because they would control 2 out of 3. So like I said, if it doesn't come this year before they leave, my guess is, you know, it would go on, and at the earliest we would get something of this sort probably in the very end of January. Maybe, you know, now the only reason it wouldn't go is the economy gets super bad, at which point then maybe we get, you know, something because they're scared. But I think if they're going to get scared, they're going to get scared before the end of the year. So we'll take a look and we're going to see. Well, this has been the current developments again for this week. Remember, you can email me, edzollers@currentfortaxdevelopments.com. You can follow me on Twitter. And my handle there, at Ed Zollers, on there. I do follow the Connect sites for Arizona, Illinois, Minnesota, New Jersey, and Washington Society. So if you're a member of those, you can post there. We'll try to get back to you on that. Again, it's been an interesting week. Next week, I will talk to you about developments. We had a few this week, you know, including one interesting one on a new exception. The parking lot tax regs did go final. But the interesting part was we got a new exception to get out of the parking lot tax regs. So that's kind of interesting, and we'll see how that goes. But otherwise, you know, check back in with us. We'll see what's going on here as we get to our last session next week for 2020. And I don't know about you, but I think most of us are probably very glad to see 2020 go. And we'll get into 2021, and we'll talk to you about what's going on, what we have there to close out the year, and give you any other developments to take place in the area of federal taxes.